You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. Tonight, the final night of the Salt Lake City Summer League. The Jazz are going to wrap things up at 7 o'clock. They take on the Philadelphia 76ers. It's a quick three-day event, but I always look forward to it. I know that a lot of people throughout the state do as well. Cheap opportunity to get up, watch some basketball in the state. I'm glad the Jazz have brought this back over the last few years. It's become a fine tradition. It sets the stage for what lies ahead in Vegas, and we'll get into that. We'll also talk Team USA. They're going to take the floor tonight as they take on Canada. And we'll talk player movement in the NBA as well. Joining us right now over the phone, as he does each week, we have James Holis. James, it's great to get you back on. I appreciate the time today because, well, there's actually relevant basketball to talk about.
Thanks for having me on, man. I'm still riding the Boston Celtics of the World Championship wave, but I can slow down long enough to talk a little hoops.
Man, you should ride that until next May. You should ride that. Don't get off the high, because
I'm not. If they make it to the finals and win another one, then the wave keeps on going. I'm never gonna hop off.
Yep. Yeah, it's house money at this point, right? It's house money. But the Boston Celtics are being talked about today because Kawhi Leonard is out for the Olympics. So Team USA goes out and they grab Derek White. That means there's three Boston Celtics now on Team USA. You get Drew, you're going to have Jason Tatum, and now you get Derek White. I'm still a little bit surprised that Jaylen Brown is not on this team. I don't know if it's, you know, if he views it as disrespectful. I believe it is. I know you're a big guy, big Jaylen Brown guy as well. I know there's rhyme and reason to everything that they do. Still, though, the fact of the matter is there's three Boston Celtics on Team USA. They take the court tonight against Canada. I'm looking forward to it, James.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. Honestly, Jaylen himself tweeted out three guy wearing the monocle emojis about 3 hours ago. So who knows how he feels about it. As a Celtics fan, I kind of don't like the fact that three of our top six guys are going to be playing, even if it's like light extended minutes this throughout the summer, while us getting rest and getting their bodies worked on. And then another guy's going to be out, right? Kristaps going to be out probably till January or February, maybe. So I'm not a big fan of that. But it's also good to see Green represented. As far as Jaylen Brown, my logic, I could probably see is like, look, there's LeBron, there's Kevin Durant, there's Booker, there's all of these quote-unquote alpha guys, right? Tatum, all these guys already. But this is probably one of the best collections of pure talent. If you look at hardware and accolades, maybe ever, as far as our Olympic team. But they need a guy like there's a Drew Holiday, and now there's a Derek White. Guys who don't need a lot of shots, guys who are going to focus on defense and doing the little things, right? The Iguodala kind of glue guys. So maybe from that perspective, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I like this team. I like this team an awful lot, and I think adding Derek White, I mean, it's fine. You look at this roster front to back. I made the comparison earlier this week. We go back to the original Dream Team, and I mean, look, it was star-studded. We had the big names, but Magic was not in the league at that particular time. Larry Bird could barely get up and down the floor. That might have been the greatest collective talent ever assembled, but at that particular time in their careers, it was not the greatest team ever assembled. I love the 2008 Redeem Team. You look at that roster front to back. To me, it was dynamic, and I can put this team right up there with it. I think when you take a look at the collective talent, those three teams stand out to me, James. I mean, obviously 92 because of the namesake. I love the 2008 Redeem Team, and I love this 2024 team. I think it's fantastic.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I remember the original Dream Team as the greatest ever, but when you do kind of step back and look at it, once you get past the first six guys, 2008 and now, you know, this version might be just deeper and better, right? There's no Christian Laettner on this team. There's no there's no Patrick Ewing on this team. And Ewing was great back then, but compared to, you know, the top 10 guys on this team, probably talent, you know, pound for pound better than anything we've ever trotted out there. So, but at the same time, the rest of the world has caught up a lot, right? The relative talent around the world and the sophistication of the basketball, the training. So even though I think we should win pretty easily, I think we're going to have some good games.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the collective talent, and that's, you know, one of the things I always bring up. If people want to talk about the 92 Dream Team, the fact of the matter is the competition today, I mean, it doesn't compare. What was it? I believe there was one player in the NBA, if I remember back in 1992, it was Tony Kukoc, right? I think he was the only player that Team USA went up against that was actually in the NBA. You just mentioned Porzingis a few moments ago. I mean, if you take a look at the top NBA talent, there are a lot of guys inside that top 10, top 15 that don't play for Team USA today. That's kind of unheard of.
Yeah, and I mean, there might have been a couple of other fringe guys.
Yeah, maybe so.
What's my guy? Maybe Petrovic back then, 92, right?
Yeah.
A guy like, what's his name? The guy from Golden State. Zydrunas? Goskas. Well, either way, the point is, yes, we didn't have an influx of Euro talent and foreign talent back then. It's way different now, right? The rest of the world has done a great job developing and really, like, it's definitely a skills versus talent kind of thing with the rest of the world, right? That's why even though we might have superior talent in those, you know, those embarrassing FIBA and Olympic showings, we might have had more talent, but the other teams played more cohesively as a unit, and international rules are just so different. So, but I definitely think we have the talent and the skill and the experience internationally with a guy like Kevin Durant and LeBron, and these guys, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, one thing that I don't believe has been talked about too much, and I'm going to throw this out there, and I don't know if you care about this or if this ranks to any level of significance in your mind, but if Team USA was to win the gold medal, Kevin Durant would become the first individual ever to claim 4 Olympic basketball gold medals. That's fairly impressive.
That really is, and I think he also is up there with like the highest individual scoring average of an Olympian, you know, like it's incredible, man. Kevin Durant keeps stacking on his resume, and I get it. A lot of people won't care because, you know, they think NBA, but FIBA is a big deal. It's a bigger deal to the rest of the world than the NBA is. So, tip your hat to Kevin Durant, man. He was made for basketball. He lives, eats, and sleeps basketball. And, you know, I know NBA fans give him a hard time about his legacy and all that, but that will be quite a legacy to have.
Yeah, I mean, I know some people get annoyed when we call the NBA champs world champs. I have no problem calling them the world champs, because if you watch the NBA today and pay attention to the Olympics this year, we have the greatest collection of talent playing in the NBA. It is now worldwide. Maybe if you had a problem with it back in the 80s, whatever. But now I think when you take a look at where the game is and how global the NBA has become, the greatest collection of talent in the world gets to the NBA. That's why I have no problem calling the Boston Celtics world champs. There's not another team in the world that would beat that group, right? And so based off where the talent is globally, based off what you're going to see in the Olympics, yeah, we have the world champions here on our own country.
And I agree, too. It's always a fun conversation to have, right? I think of the football player who raised that issue about, oh, other places in the world, but that's fine. But yeah, I think the Celtics would give any international team a run for their money. But it's also hard to call it. It is complex because, again, we've seen some amazing U.S. talent lose to, quote-unquote, lesser talented international teams. Even when we lost to Canada a couple years ago in the FIBA thing, like, it happens. Let's be real. Because it's such a different game, right? I think you tell the Celtics, you give them 4 or 5 months to train under FIBA rules, they would be right there. It's always fun to think about. And it would be cool, let's say we had the world champion and then, like, you know, halfway through the summer, even in a non-Olympic year, we played maybe an all-star team from a certain, from a Euro league or a champion from another league. That'd be really cool, right? An exhibition game, 36 minutes, 40 minutes. That'd be really cool.
That'd be great. No, that's a great idea. That's a great idea because I think even under FIBA rules, the idea that the Boston Celtics, I mean, that's a collective group. That's a team that plays together. Here we are in July. We already know what the makeup of your roster is going to look like. I don't think anyone in this country, I don't think anyone in the world would be able to compete with that. I really don't.
I mean, again, Drew Holiday and Derek White are your, you know, 4th, 5th, 6th best players.
Like, yeah.
That's what makes Boston really dangerous. Not Tatum and Brown up top, who are really good, but they're not top 2 or 3 players, is the fact that your 4th and 5th, and even Al Horford, 6th best player, can, you know, go toe-to-toe with most teams' 3rd or 4th best player, no matter what country they're from. So, that's something. Let's talk to Commissioner Silver about that.
I'd rather watch that than the in-season tournament.
100%. Or even replace that. Guess what? Next year, it's an in-season. They play the Euro team.
Yeah.
Right? I would 100% love that. Let's get that rolling.
Yeah, that would be great. Again, James Holish joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, I want to get your perspective on some player movement. I know you are going to agree with me on this, just based off of I've seen your comments on Twitter. The whole DeMar DeRozan to Sacramento deal, I don't love this deal. I don't know that this makes Sacramento any better. Not only did they give DeRozan a 3-year, $75 million deal, but they had to give up Harrison Barnes to get him. Now, on the flip side, I take a look at the San Antonio Spurs, who I know the last time I talked to you, you were, I don't want to say you were high on them, but the optimism was growing in your mind that this was going to be a team that could push, right, to get into the play-in round. Now they acquire Harrison Barnes for absolutely nothing. I don't know that this was a great deal for Sacramento.
So here's my thing. A couple things, because I did tweet about that. I mean, you are in agreement. I didn't realize Harrison Barnes had like one of his lowest production seasons ever. He only averaged like 12 points, 2 rebounds, and three assists. I mean, 3 rebounds and like less than 2 assists. I did write the rest of that low. So this is a case of a guy who puts up good stats in DeRozan versus maybe an impact kind of guy. Because Barnes, I went and looked at this, he was part of seven of their top 10 lineups for Sacramento. And what he didn't really produce as far as numbers, he makes up for the impact, right? His versatility, he can guard maybe 2 through 4. He doesn't take a lot off the table, even if he's not putting a lot, like just bring a lot of impact production. He doesn't take off the table. He allows Fox and Sabonis to do their thing, and he kind of fills in the gaps. That's kind of how I view him for that team. You're removing that, and you're bringing in a guy who's going to need 20-25 shots a game. He doesn't defend. That's DeRozan. He doesn't stretch the floor. He does not play off the catch and shoot. He's going to want to manufacture his own offense, and that's kind of a clunky pairing with a guy like De'Aaron Fox. So I'm not sure if this makes them markedly better, where that is a giant step up in name brand and name power. Sure, star power. We all know who DeRozan is. I don't know if DeRozan is the kind of player, though, to take a team like the Sacramento Kings, which are all offense and, not a lot of defense, to the next level.
I don't either. I mean, if you go back and look at what happened in Chicago, and there are so many variables, when you go back and look at DeMar DeRozan's time in Chicago, you can't just pull up a stat sheet or a box score. You can't do that. You have to look at the variables and the difficulties that Chicago faced, because there were several times I thought this Bulls team was close to being a very competitive team in the Eastern Conference, and I don't think that injuries obviously did not help their cause one bit. I thought they were on the right track, but things were derailed fairly quickly. I don't look at his production and what he did in Chicago as the main correlation point saying it's not going to happen in Sacramento. I think you got to look a little bit deeper to everything that you just outlined. It's a clunky fit with De'Aaron Fox out of the backcourt. It just is.
And that's it, man. Like, with Fox, you think you would want a guy who can, really space the floor. Would it be fine operating almost like a more Klay Thompson-type guy, right, where it's more about catch and shoot and being extremely productive on maybe limited shots when you got a guy like De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis. Like, Sabonis is one on his, 18 to 22 shots a game himself. So another guy who just, operates from the mid-range, which is, that's kind of where Sabonis is, the low block where Sabonis is, and really, he is he's a small forward now, right? He can't really guard up. He's not going to guard power forwards. He's not a strong defender.
Nope.
Maybe it raises their floor just a little bit. I don't know if it really raises their ceiling. And for a team that, they didn't make the playoffs last year, I don't know, man. I guess maybe that deal is moving a year or two to bring a better fit. And maybe they make us eat crow and they all really fit together this year. So,
I'll tell you the guy that is still out there that to me just seems like a better fit in Sacramento would have been Gary Trent.
Yes, and Gary Trent, a lot like a guy like Caleb Martin, I think the new second apron rules are really hamstringing these very good but not great mid-level role players / starting quality guys who aren't stars. Because Caleb Martin's a really good player. Caleb Martin thought he can get more money than he was going to get from Miami when they would have gave him $65 million over 5 years. He ended up with $32 million over 4. Gary Trent, I guess, wanted $25 million a year from the Toronto Raptors, and they weren't going to pay him that. And now that deal's off the table, and now he's going to be out scrambling. Hopefully he can find the mid-level. But, yes, Trent would have been a great fit, especially if they kept Barnes. I would have much rather have Harrison Barnes and Trent than just pay pay DeMar DeRozan.
Gary Trent's going to get the mid-level from someone. I mean, if you just take a look at the advanced metrics, right, it wasn't a career year for him in Toronto, but this is still a guy that knocked down close to 44% of his pull-up three-point shots. There's a place for him in the league, and for a team that has the full full mid-level, it's a no-brainer.
I agree, but like for him, I'm pretty sure he wants to go to a team that maybe is going to be on the winning side.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those teams might not have the mid-level available. So that's where it becomes kind of tricky, especially like, you know, free agency, boom, the money kind of goes fast, and then you're trying to, all the rest of the guys are kind of playing musical chairs, trying to get in where they fit in. And Garrett, I don't think he left that in the cold. He might end up taking something, have to hold his nose and take a 1 year and then try again next year, you know? So, second apron machinations and maneuvering have been fascinating so far.
I think he's the best player available out there right now. I guess maybe the other situation would be, what does Chicago do next now? Because they still have Zach LaVine. So they move on from DeMar DeRozan. In my mind, James, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever for Chicago to, on their own merit, bring Zach LaVine back next season. It makes no sense whatsoever to me.
Absolutely no sense. Chicago has always been reticent to actually do the full rebuild. I think now they're going full youth movement. So they basically got to get Zach LaVine out of there. And they've been, from what I understand, they've been trying to basically give him away, attaching picks to get some team to just take his bad contract. And they're having that hard time. And that, again, comes the second apron thing, where teams just don't want to take on a lot of bad dead money, especially a team that's going to be trying to contend. And they you know, the punitive measure of the luxury tax is so heavy on the minds of these teams that they're being super, super just cautious in budgeting their money. So Zach LaVine is set to make, I want to say he's a $48 million or something ridiculous
yeah.
like that. And he's a good player. Again, like LaVine, he doesn't defend. Current contract, he'll be making $49 million in 2026-2027 on a player option that he would almost certainly pick up. It's tough. There's a time when a guy like this would have been coveted by so many teams, right? He's an all-star all the way through the 90s. He's just like a considered superstar. The NBA is so skilled and I think so sophisticated that teams are realizing you cannot survive on guys who can only really thrive on one side of the ball. And here we are.
Yeah, that's a bad spot for the Bulls to be in. It definitely is. The report that I read was they were trying to attach at least 3 second-round picks to LaVine just to get rid of him. And, you know, ultimately you have to do that, right? Based on the contract numbers that you just threw out, you're going to have to give up some very valuable assets to get rid of this guy. I mean, this is not going to be a Russell Westbrook deal where Washington somehow lucked into 3 first-rounders. I can't even remember what it was, 3 picks, something. It was something ridiculous. Might have been 3 first-rounders. I can't even remember. It was something ridiculous, man. They're not going to walk into a situation like that. It's not happening.
Absolutely not. First-rounders are both, I think, overvalued because teams – but then the value is value. So there's no way a team's going to give up tangible assets and future bites at that first-round apple for a guy like Zach LaVine. And the fact that I think I even read – I might be incorrect. I thought there were talk of, you know, the Bulls be willing to attach a first-rounder, at least a first-rounder, you know, some future first-rounder to some team to just take him. Give us a bad contract that expires a year and just take this guy. And nobody wants him, right? The fact that a team like Golden State right now, which is really hemorrhaging talent, and they need something to try to keep the Steph Curry era going. The fact that the Lakers had an opportunity to do something, right? Lakers are trying to do something, add more to the team and get them to the next level. Nobody wants Zach LaVine. So it's a damning thing. For Zach LaVine and where his value around the league right now.
Well, but I think you bring up another great point here, right? So you have fans of teams out there, and you can mention the Lakers, I think you mentioned the Jazz as well, right here in the state of Utah. I think Jazz fans have become a little bit frustrated with the lack of movement and the lack of roster improvement. But in the same sense, you can't make a move just to make a move that hampers the future and what you have planned. In this day and age in the NBA, you have to look more than 1 year ahead, going back to the first and second aprons. You have to.
And that's it, man. Like, the financial ramifications are staggering if you're a second apron team. If the listeners don't know, like, you all of a sudden cannot do package multiple guys in the trades to make the money add up. You can't, you're basically hard capped as far as you can't use your mid level exception. You start losing draft picks if you're over second apron 2 years or like your first round pick will move to the end of the first round no matter where you finish in the order. So, And then not on top of that, then like the really punitive luxury tax, where it's like you're paying $2.5 for every $1 you're over, and that, I mean, you're multiple years in the luxury tax. So The owners are really trying to protect themselves in the last CBA, and they're doing it. And ownership and management have to move as if the money matters now.
He's James Holis, always kind enough to join us. James, great to get you on, especially with some basketball that I'm highly intrigued with tonight. Team USA and Canada going yet at, I believe it's 8 o'clock tip-off. Final night of the Salt Lake City Summer League. Jazz Sixers tonight at 7 o'clock. Always a pleasure to get you on. And things died down for you? You recording a pod here in the summer?
I actually think I missed one last week. I'm about to apologize to my co-host Jesse and my homegirl Ace. But we're going to be talking basketball because I know they're Knicks fans and they're going to be really happy about the moves they've made. And I'm a Celtics fan, so I'm going to be obnoxious.
You've earned the right. Listen, you've earned the right, man. The most obnoxious thing the Celtics could have done, though, was draft Bronny at 54. And I'm a little bit disappointed you didn't do that. hey, listen, Red Auerbach would have done that. Without hesitation, he would have done that.
That's a whole other conversation, man. I wish Bronny nothing but the best. I've watched the highlights and... Ooh, buddy. I guess we'll see. Let's hope that the lineage and the intelligence and everything really kind of kicks in the next couple of years. Because right now,
it's not good. It's not good. James, always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time.
You're the man, Jordan.
We're going to break one more time. We'll come back, put final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports when we return. We are live from the Sutherland Studios.